This is Maggie Jones and Natural Wonders. I thought today I would do a sampler from Big River Magazine. My intention is to turn you on to a terrific magazine that's been around for quite a long time, covering issues surrounding the Upper Mississippi River, which goes through the heart of the Driftless area. I read in April from Big River an article all about neonicotinoids and the corn and soybean crops and the effect on insects called Where Are the Mayflies, written by John Lyon. That was last April of 2025. Remember, all of my readings are archived at wdrt.org. I always love to plunge into Big River. It arrives every 2 months. And one part of the magazine I never want to miss is Reggie McLeod, who's the editor and publisher. His piece called From the Riverbank, which is always the introductory piece. It's always compelling. So I'll read one of the Reggie McLeod's From the Riverbank. This is copyrighted. And then I'll read a fun piece about how they've kept the ferry going over to Lansing from Wisconsin and from Lansing back to Wisconsin on some of the coldest below zero days this winter. And so this is a sampler. This is January, February, 2026. And this is Reggie McLeod. Working on the homeless in the Driftless story got me thinking about homeless people who I have known. In fact, I was homeless for about half a year when I was 19 and living in and around Detroit. I usually slept in my 1957 Ford before it broke down. I sometimes couch surfed, slept in a graveyard, or walked around the city all night. Until now, I hadn't thought much about why I lived that way. Even now, I didn't entirely understand it. I liked to party, but I didn't have a drug problem. I did feel a dissatisfaction with society because of the war in Vietnam and the aftermath of the Detroit riots. The city was beat up and people were restless. I had friends going to Vietnam, coming home from Vietnam, and friends seeking refuge across the river in Canada to avoid the draft. I felt overwhelmed and needed to step out of the story for a while. When my father was a child, his family was homeless for more than a year during the Depression. My grandfather was out of work and the family had no money. They lived in a tent right through a Michigan winter. My dad would recall eating corn mush for breakfast, and then his mother made the leftover mush into patties and fried them up for dinner. I believe the malnutrition he suffered as a child affected his health for the rest of his life. As a child, I saw another kind of homelessness at my grandparents' farm in eastern Kentucky. One afternoon, I was sitting on the front porch when I noticed someone walking down the long gravel driveway carrying a small suitcase. I told my grandma, and she came out in the yard to greet the old man, who she knew. She took him into the kitchen and cooked him a meal as they discussed the affairs of neighbors, near and far, that they both knew. He stayed for a couple of days sharing gossip with both my grandparents. Then one morning I watched him carry his suitcase back up the driveway. This bearer of news was headed for another hospitable home on his circuit. Later, my grandparents explained to me that he had no home and that this was how he lived. I've been remembering homeless folks I've known in Detroit, Milwaukee, and here in the Driftless. Each had a different story. Some were in distress, some had drug problems, some had lost their job, some were confused, and some just considered themselves free of the binds that constrained the rest of us. I had a friend in high school who lived in a station wagon with his mother and siblings after his father abandoned them. We should remember that fortune can carry us in one direction, then unexpectedly send us in another. Each of us needs a helping hand sometimes, and sometimes we are fortunate enough to be able to offer one. And that's Reggie McLeod's From the Riverbank, the introduction always to Big River Magazine. And now I'll read from the March-April 2026 edition,
a copyrighted article,
and that is Ferry and Icebreaker Crews Battle Ice and Sub-Zero Weather Story and photos by Fritz Funk. And Fritz Funk lives on Bryce Prairie in Onalaska. He's a licensed captain. His last story in Big River was Electric Outboards, Quiet, Clean, Pricey in the January-February 2025 issue. Captain Kim Kotke texted me on a minus 20 degree January morning as he readied the Pride of Cassville to start its daily runs between Lansing, Iowa, and Wisconsin. Quote, rudders froze up as well as most of my windows, unquote. I pried myself out of bed early to see if the ferry crew can pull off the impossible on this deep freeze of a January day. The ferry is now the only way to cross the river on the 70-mile stretch between La Crosse, Wisconsin, and Prairie du Chien. The old Blackhawk Bridge was deemed unsafe and closed permanently on October 20. It was demolished on December 19. The Pride was designed to run from May through October, where it might see a light frost in the morning, but it was not built for crunching through swirling ice floes during winter's deep freeze. Kotke is an old hand with 9 years of summer service on the boat crossing the Mississippi River between Cassville, Wisconsin, and Iowa, but never in winter. On my 30-mile drive downriver on the Wisconsin side from La Crosse to the ferry landing across from Lansing, I saw the river was frozen solid, not even much open water below Lock and Dam 8 in Genoa. When I arrived at the ferry landing, the river was boiling with steaming clouds. A small bit of water was open at the Lansing Bend, thanks to the diligence of three ice-breaking boats continually crunching through the pack ice while the Pride sat waiting at her mooring. It took 4 hours to get everything thawed out. Quote, the rudders were just tight this morning. It took forever to get them moving, Kotke explained. By 10, the ferry service was up and running, and the closely choreographed dance of the ferry's skilled and dedicated team unfolded. Gates swung open, cars and trucks rolled aboard. The bundled-up deck crew closed the gates. A heavy boot blow forced a stubborn latch closed, connecting the tug along the side of the barge, and off we went across the river, accompanied by the muffled roar of the diesels from the ice-breaking boats and the rumble of crunching ice echoing off the bluffs. The Pride of Cassville is an articulated tug and barge arrangement that comes with its own special challenges. The center of the Pride's bow is permanently attached to the center of one side of its barge by a long pivot arm. In order for vehicles to drive straight on and off the barge without backing up, the tug turns 180 degrees on that pivot arm as it departs each landing so that it points toward the opposite shore. Quote, sometimes flipping it is as tricky as landing because of the wind. Windy nights are just no fun, Kotke cautioned. Once the tug pivots, it's crucial that the steel latch closes to hook the tug and barge together, pointed in the right direction. If that latching fails, the tug and barge drift rather helplessly in the wind and current without much control. Deckhand Torin Mom explained how, during a previous cold snap, the airline driving the all-important latch froze, causing some anxious moments. Now deckhands listen for the confirming clank of the latch closing, then radio that confirmation up to the pilot before they head across the river. Once in a while, the latch requires a kick from a boot. The ferry crosses the main channel just upstream of where the new bridge is being built. When the bridge opens in 2027, the ferry will be out of business. As we approach Lansing, the railroad radio channel lights up. Just a heads up, we have another northbound train coming up, another northbound train. All right, copy that, Captain Kotke radios back. Then he relays the heads up to his deck crew. Railroad crews are part of this choreography, too. Both the entrance and exit at the ferry waiting area at the Lansing Marina are crossed by railroad tracks that have no gates or signals to warn of approaching trains. Also, both crossings curve sharply and have adjacent steep hills, a recipe for disaster. Nobody wants to roll down their window at 20 below to listen for train horns. To make it safer for the vehicle traffic, the railroads post crews in trucks at both railroad crossings for the 16 hours that the ferry runs each day. As a train approaches, they move their trucks to block the road at the crossings. Quote, "Looks like you only got a few on this run. We'll have time to get them through," the train crew radios as we dock. "Copy that," Kottke confirms, "and our departing vehicles roll through the crossing with plenty of time before the train crews block the tracks." Riding up in the wheelhouse with Kottke, his skill is apparent as he calculates the barge's sideways drift in the wind and current and deftly threads the barge's ramp into the narrow steel-sided opening at the ferry dock. There's not much room for error, and if you miss the narrow dock opening, there would be a big crash with steel grinding on steel. "They didn't give us much room to get in there," Kottke observed. A while later, we back away from the dock with our new load of vehicles. Then, in a move that would make a ballet master proud, Kottke pirouettes the Pride around to face its new forward direction, flips a lever to hook the all-important latch onto the barge, and off we go. Maneuvering is still not easy, though. Quote, "This is on your hip, one side, so it's different. You can steer real good now to port, but try steering to starboard. It just doesn't react. These are not real big rudders, so it's a little getting used to it. About the first or second run in the morning, you figure out what the wind is doing and everything else, and then you can pretty much just do it. I'd retired 5 years ago, so I was a little rusty here at first. Took me a little while to get acclimated again," unquote. As we waited at the landing for vehicles to load, I noticed that to keep the rudders from freezing up at 20 below, Kottke has to keep them moving constantly. Uh-oh, frozen again. It doesn't want to go all the way. Only goes down to 45. Ah, there she goes. Captain and crew keep battling conditions this boat is not designed for. Quote, "Leave it sit in one place too long and ice forms, and there you are, stuck. This is a summer ferry. It's never run in this kind of stuff before," Kottke explained. Kottke likes the work, and slow days can be frustrating. With today's extreme cold, the Iowa Department of Transportation posted a cautionary note about morning delays on its Facebook page, which is titled Lansing Bridge. So initial arrivals are slow. "I wish somebody would show up," Kottke mused. While we waited, I asked about the icebreakers. "They do a pretty good job of keeping it open for us. They have to come in early in the morning because we start at 5:30, and through the night they are not here, of course. That one is pushing that barge to break the ice, and then he'll park it and come through and wash it around. That red one is an icebreaker, and this other one is too. It's trying to freeze over on the downstream end and then come up this way, so they've been working on that. Most mornings are busy with commuting traffic as well as vehicles from the bridge contractor shuttling back and forth." Finally, Kottke pipes up, "Maybe we got one coming. Hallelujah. Yep, got a couple of takers. All right, let's get going." Hours later, as we dock at the end of Kottke's shift, he makes arrangements with his deckhands to carpool the next morning. Kottke is up at 3:30 in the morning, but admits he's not a morning person. Quote, "Some of the deckhands come up from as far away as Cassville and Platteville. They're early birds, so I let them drive." This week, Kottke is on day shift, working from 5:30 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. Then he'll be off 7 days and return on the night shift. Walking off the ferry, he says, "It's only fair we switch every other week. I'll look for you at 4 o'clock. Heading to his truck, Kottke worries about the days ahead. "It's not going to be fun tomorrow and Friday. We get 25 and 30 mile an hour winds." And this next part is called Finding a Crew. The ferry crews who step forward for the winter work are experienced and definitely determined. Many were veterans of summer commercial navigation jobs on the river. Kottke is a lifelong river rat growing up near the river in Bloomington, Wisconsin, just south of Prairie du Chien. After stints on the river with Marquette Transportation, driving trucks and doing other work, he decided to take a break and spent 5 summers guiding fishing clients on the Nooshogak River near Dillingham, Alaska. I'm a former Alaska Department of Fish and Game biologist, and I, too, had worked in that area. We soon found we had lots in common. Kotke followed the Alaska guiding with a stint with La Crosse-based Brennan Marine, but then Cassville's mayor found out about his qualifications and recruited him to pilot the Pride of Cassville. After 9 summers piloting the Pride, Kotke figured he was ready to retire. Quote, way back in September, I got a call that they were shorthanded for pilots at Lansing because the others were still running the river, you know. So I ran night shifts every night in November, well, at least 28 of them. It was December before some other pilots became available, and I was able to get some days off, he recalled. He missed deer season. Quote, but it's okay. I've killed a lot of deer in my life. This is a great opportunity. I'm thankful for it. I really am. The Pride of Cassville crew had to figure out how to adapt to cold with what they had. There was only one very small defrosting fan in the wheelhouse. They added electric heaters. Quote, we could only run 2 electric heaters in the wheelhouse off our engine room generator, so we added a portable generator on deck and ran an extension cord up in there for a 3rd heater, unquote. There's no insulation. Kotke has 2 of the heaters on full blast and aimed directly at the wheelhouse windows, along with several household room fans to help move the air. Safety is paramount, and as a good captain, Kotke keeps a watchful eye out. Early one frozen morning, concerned about safety, quote, I told Clayton, the DOT project manager, I couldn't run normal, but would try some test runs with no passengers to see if we could go safely. Then I lost steering completely. I had that icebreaker tug pull me back to the landing, unquote. Even just keeping the engine room and equipment warm is a challenge. You can't just idle the engines at rest. Quote, you got to keep the engine RPMs up to keep them warm. Everything just feels heavy, unquote. The Pride has modern electronics and safety equipment. Even though he does his close quarters maneuvering by experience or feel, an electronic chart plotter tells him how fast the boat is moving. The Pride also has an automatic identification system, AIS, transponder, which broadcasts its exact position heading and speed for other vessels to see. Anyone can watch the Pride's mapped position with online marine tracking platforms like marinetraffic.com or shipfinder.co. That is Fritz Funk's article in Big River about these icy cold days that we have left behind on the Mississippi River. And I'm reading from the Big River Magazine, March-April 2026. And one more little sampler. This is the back page. This is an announcement they made about a year ago. Big River is now a nonprofit publication with a mission to produce excellent regional journalism about the Mississippi River from the Twin Cities to the Quad Cities and the surrounding area. Finding high-quality, fact-checked, nonpartisan news about the Driftless area is getting harder. Our staff and readers value learning about the problems, victories, threats, and opportunities in this beautiful part of the country. We aim to continue on this mission, improve on it, and reach out to more readers. You, our subscribers, are Big River's foundation. You keep us going. Subscription income pays the printer, postage, and wages of our hardworking staff. Now, as a nonprofit, we want to do more in-depth investigative stories, share regional news in an era of declining news media, reach more readers along the river and around the Driftless area. We also plan to host community meetings around the region to discuss important issues, put all of our back issues online, and make this wealth of stories available to all subscribers. To take on these challenges and achieve our goals, we need to add to our staff. Currently, Big River is produced by only 1 full-time editor and a hard-working crew of part-timers. We are stretched thin. To add employees, we need your financial support. We know you're a Big River reader and probably a subscriber, and we thank you. Please consider playing a bigger part in this mission by becoming a supporter. And then it says, for more information, visit bigrivervoice.org.
And to find access to all kinds of articles from past issues, be sure to look at bigrivermagazine.com.
So that's a sampler of one of my favorite media in this area, Big River Magazine. This is Maggie Jones and Natural Wonders. Thank you so much for listening.